a lot of people think they're stuck with their health plan. It costs too much, or for whatever reason, they just don't like it. The great news, you are not stuck with it. There is a choice. It's called MediShare, and you could save so much. The typical savings for a family is $500 a month. Major difference maker. This is the affordable alternative to health insurance. And just to give you a little more info about MediShare, it's a Christian healthcare sharing ministry. It's worked beautifully for 26 years, has more than 400,000 members, and they've shared over $3 billion of each other's medical bills. So yes, they can help share your needs too. So you're not stuck. There's an excellent alternative. Whether you're single or married, you got a family, MediShare is super flexible. You can choose an option that works for you and start saving lots of money. You can join anytime. They're great to talk to. No pressure. Call 866-88-BIBLE. That's 866-88-BIBLE. 866-88-BIBLE.
The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. My buddy, engineer-producer John Couch on the other side of the glass. Together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show for this Wednesday. It's our midweek edition. It's April 8th, 2020. I'm seated here all alone in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio on 1030 Tucson's Voice for Trusted News Talk. We have our worldwide live listening on my website anywhere in the world. If you're with a computer, around a computer, into a computer, it's buckmastershow.com, where we piggyback with kvoi.com to make sure you get the live stream. And of course, at buckmastershow.com, all of our programs, podcasts, quite an archive, over 9 years of programs at buckmastershow.com. Our live line number, if you'd like to join us, 790-2040 for questions or comments. Jim Cantrell is the founder of several entrepreneurial startups, including Vector Launch, which developed affordable small launch capabilities aimed at the micro spacecraft market. Jim's career includes assignments at the French Space Agency and the NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory. He was on the founding team of Moon Express, a private company attempting to land on the lunar surface, and he was part of the founding team at SpaceX, where he was the first vice president of business development. He's a mechanical engineer. Jim has an extensive background early in his career, and we'll talk a little bit about that during the half hour, in bioweapons detection and bioengineered viruses and spores. Jim has a passion for road racing. He's the founder of Vintage Exotics Competition Engineering, which designs and restores race cars. Jim, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Bill. Thanks for the intro.
Well, it's good to have you on the program. This is the first time we have talked on the air in a while, a year ago perhaps, when you were still the CEO at Vector. Then in August, everything changed. Jim Cantrell, what happened at Vector?
Yeah, so kind of like COVID-19 or whatever you want to call this, it was a similar sort of situation that we really didn't foresee happening and came out of the blue, so it was very sudden. There was one of our major investors, Sequoia, pulled out suddenly in terms of their support, and that really collapsed our financing. And Vector was not cash flow positive, as most of these startups aren't for a number of years. It was doing very well. We were a little late on the rocket side of things, and that was causing some, shall we say, some consternation between all the various founders. Several of the other founders were really responsible for getting the rocket going. I was the guy who was out raising the money and providing the vision. And so as we sort of look back on what happened, it was really a lot of disagreements and fighting between the co-founders that I think drove Sequoia away. But their turn was sudden. We didn't expect it. We were in the middle of what we call a Series C financing round. So it was another $150 million. And ironically, found out a few weeks ago that one of the investment banks we'd been talking to had actually decided to lead that round. They just hadn't got around to telling us by the time things fell apart. So it was, you know, had Sequoia decided to do this several weeks later, we would have survived it just fine. But on Friday, before they had their meeting of partnership at Sequoia, they were very supportive, talking even about leading our round. And then on Monday, they turned around and said, you know, not only were they not supportive, but they asked that their representative to our board resign. So that was a very negative signal to the investment community, and that world, you know, takes signals like that and runs with them. So we had a bit of money in the bank, and the problem was it was bridge financing, so part of it was debt. And there was this other law, the WARN Act, that we had to deal with, which says that if you're over so many people and you run out of cash, 60 days of cash or less, you have to put written warnings out. If you don't do that, you as board members are felons. So our best legal advice from our lawyers was to lay everybody off. So that's what we did. We got that news on Monday. By Friday, we'd laid everybody off. And I had brought in some financing in the interim in a few days. And my co-founders didn't want to take the financing, and they decided they can make a run at it and finance the company. So I left. And you can see that they filed bankruptcy and were not successful in raising the money. So I've moved on to other things. I'm very sad about that. I'm particularly sad that so many people had invested in this and it really didn't need to happen. But I guess that's how some of these things go. I can tell you I'm a lot smarter from the experience.
What happened, Jim, then? I had heard something about, did Lockheed what's left of Vector?
So, yeah, through the bankruptcy process, it's Chapter 11, so reorganization, which means that they'll stay in business if they can settle all their debts. They went through a process of auctioning off both intellectual property and physical assets. And so the intellectual property that Lockheed bought was something called Galactic Sky, which was a set of patents that represented software-defined satellites. So this was an idea that I had early on in the company to build both satellites and rockets, and these satellites could then be controlled sort of independently by individuals in part without threatening the whole satellite. So sort of like what we do with servers out on the internet today, but just in space. And that's what Lockheed bought. The rest of the assets are still for sale, as I understand. I haven't stayed that close to it.
Jim, some of our Facebook fans, I think I can call them fans, followers of our program, have confused what happened at Vector with Worldview, and that you guys took a lot of money from the county. You want to clear that? Why don't you want to clear that up right now? Go ahead.
Sure. Yeah, no, we received no money from the county. All of our money came from either federal contracts, private contracts, or investment dollars from private citizens and investment firms. So the county, we did have a deal with to eventually move into their aerospace park out south of the airport, but no funds were exchanged. Worldview, on the other hand, the county had financed the building of their large facility there. And nothing like that was either foreseen or done with Vector.
From your experience with Vector, you've now moved on to something else. Give me kind of the bottom line of what you're doing now, and then I want to move on to COVID.
Sure. Yeah. So after Vector collapsed, I spent 2 weeks in my swimming pool in the summer and trying to figure out if I could actually retire. And my wife retired a couple of years ago, and I'm kind of jealous of that. And after 2 weeks of boredom, I decided I had to get back in the game. And so I've started working with another company called R2 Space up in Michigan. And we're starting a Tucson division here where we're building radar satellites for the military on a commercial basis. And we've got some more parts of the business plan as well that I probably won't go into today, but we've got a far-reaching idea, and I think it will benefit the Tucson community. And I haven't given up, and I certainly not the kind of personality that gives up very easily.
I have that when you said you just spent 2 weeks in the pool. For those that remember the movie The Graduate, I can see you with an adult beverage there and lazing about the pool. There you go. Jim Cantrell, you've got a fascinating resume, and you've done some interesting work, not only with, you know, the space part of it, but what was your work with bioweapons and bioengineering viruses?
Yeah, kind of nothing I ever expected to get involved with, but let me put it in context real quickly. After you mentioned I was working the French Space Agency, and that was a joint Soviet-French mission to Mars. And at the time, we were working with the Soviet Union. That was pre-Pooch and so forth in the late 80s. And when the Soviet Union had a hardline Pooch or a revolution, as they called it, in 1991, that sort of set the project into spiral downward. So I headed back to the U.S., and I ended up going back to the university that I'd studied at in Utah. And because nobody else would hire me, they considered me a bit of a traitor, because I'd worked with the Russians, even the Soviets, even though I, you know, was a Reagan voter back then. It was kind of an odd feeling, you know, to feel like I had been abandoned by my country just because I went somewhere for a few years. But within about a month, my boss, who was a former Air Force colonel, had a friend from West Point that recruited me into the intelligence agencies to help them stop brain drain in the former Soviet Union. And when he discovered I knew the language and I knew the people and had been there and was quite comfortable going back, you know, they started funneling money through the university to get a university program in with the Moscow Aviation Institute, so that we could start really stop the brain drain going from, you know, Iran, going from Moscow to Iran in North Korea. In other places, there was a lot of that going on, because none of these Soviets were getting paid. The government wouldn't pay anybody because they didn't have the money. And so, you know, they had to feed their families, and you could hardly blame them for doing this, but it was a very dangerous situation. So I went in off and on for about 6 years in the former Soviet Union, and we did mainly space stuff. But, part of our orders were, if there's stuff to buy up and interesting things to report on, to do that. And what we found out was, that there was a lot of bioweapons programs that had been just abandoned in place. And a lot of those kind of scientists were sort of wandering about, again, looking for a way to feed their families. So we got involved with that. And I learned a lot about what the Soviets had done in bioweapons programs. And it was shocking, I think, to most of us. That despite the treaties, that they had what looked like offensive bioweapons programs involving anthrax and Marburg, which is an Ebola variant, trying to weaponize that, and they'd had accidents and so forth. But following that, that kind of led me into a program at the same university where we were working on means of detecting bioweapons that had been deployed by terrorists. So this was post 9/11. And so I got involved because of my knowledge of some of what the Soviets had done.
All right.
And
hold your thought right there, Jim Cantrell. We're going to take a break right here. When we come back, I want to hear, and I know our listeners would be very interested as well, what you think about COVID-19 and the possibilities of some virus engineering or going on with the virus. We'll be back with Jim Cantrell, but first I want to tell our listeners about Mona's Danish Bakery. Northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, open 6:30 to 2 in the afternoon. They are open right now. You can walk in, place your order, get your bakery goods, and you walk out. Or you can call ahead. 579-1959. Call ahead, put in your order. If you want something from the grill, they'll do that as well. But Mona's Danish Bakery, the word is, folks, open. Home of the Danish Bakery. Check them out. Let's support our local businesses. There's more at monasdanishbakery.com. And, of course, a link at buckmastershow.com. More with Jim Cantrell after this.
during the coronavirus crisis. Vero Amore restaurants in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowlands 1 and Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana are still open for takeout and home delivery. You can still enjoy all your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza. They're all available for takeout and home delivery. More at veroamorepizza.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 850 transportation projects or service improvements across the region to date. The RTA is a state-established political subdivision and taxing district. The RTA's current half-cent sales tax funds the 20-year plan through June 2026. And the RTA is laying the foundation to develop a new plan. To learn more, please visit www.rtanext.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
And this is Matt Russell from the Buckmaster Show.
Matt, did you hear that Travel and Leisure magazine just ranked the Douro Valley as a top 50 spot for world travel?
Yes, so how about Portugal and Spain for my next culinary and cocktail cruise?
Let's do it on the Douro River aboard the new Amadouro ship from Ama Waterways.
I'll need a chef's table dinner, winery tours, and other private excursions.
Matt, consider it done.
Thanks, Ryan. Portugal and Spain, here we come. Go to bvtravel.com to learn more.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
During the coronavirus crisis, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is open for one-on-one appointments only by calling 795-8226 to arrange a time with Moe or Corinne. No interruptions and no other customers. Moe will even arrange a drop-off at the store's front door and coordinate a virtual design session. Moe's Gallery, Fort Lowland Dodge, 795-8226 and moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We continue now our conversation with Jim Cantrell, the former CEO of Vector Launch here in Tucson. Jim has a long career in work with items, satellites, these micro satellite market, and he's now involved with a new project. But I want to pick up on our conversation about Jim's background in bioweapons detection and bioengineered viruses and spores. Jim, do you think COVID-19 might have the footprint or the fingerprint of anything that had been bioengineered?
Well, it's a good question, and I don't know, right? I'm not in that business anymore. I haven't been in it for 20 years, but let me just tell you my observations from when I did have some involvement there. We knew that the Soviets would engineer particularly viruses, novel viruses, to look like something else. So if you did testing, you wouldn't necessarily detect them. And from what I've read, and again, I'm no expert in viruses, but COVID-19 appears to have some of that characteristic as well. But you know, the thing that we found with the Soviets is that they would, and even the Russians kept the program up later, as we found out, they would, you know, experiment with a lot of these sort of things, and they would have them in the labs. They didn't necessarily use them. I mean, the known use of bioweapons, the last real known use of it was in World War II, where the Germans used it on the Soviets on the assault on Leningrad. But it wasn't particularly effective, and it's got a lot of issues. But the fascination with it amongst all countries seems to be still there, and for defensive purposes, they seem to be operating this way. The Chinese, I knew nothing about at the time, but it's not a far stretch of the imagination that this could be a bioengineered virus, or at least you know, have found that it could transmit to humans, and there was some experimentation with it. I don't know that that's the truth. I'm just looking at the data and saying that's definitely a possibility. The one thing that kind of I look at this whole thing with a little bit of skepticism, and I know I don't have a very popular opinion. I apologize to people who get angry at me over it, but I don't see the data reflecting the panic. And so what motivated countries around the world to create the kind of reaction that they did, I think, is far more than what some people blame it on domestic politics, which probably isn't true. But there was something behind this that gave people pause, and a virus this virulent usually doesn't work out very well if it's terribly virulent. So it makes me wonder if somehow there was some knowledge about this this virus originating in a weapons lab, maybe not as an offensive weapon, but maybe got loose. You know, in the Soviet Union, I can tell you, in Yekaterinburg, for example, there was an anthrax plant there that was an offensive capability. And you have to special engineer anthrax spores. They're different than the viruses. They're a spore, and normally naturally occurring anthrax has various levels of toxicity, and it also has a larger size, so it can't actually get in your lung. And if it's small enough, if you engineer it so that they can get small enough into your lung, then that spore can release its toxins in there, and that's what kills you from anthrax. So the Soviets had a leak from one of their level 4 biocontainment systems, and it leaked out the ventilation system. And if you tracked all the infections in Yekaterinburg, they were all in this small line downwind from the facility. So you know, in terms of history, that sort of accidental contamination has happened, and we know that. And I'd just say there's a possibility that that can happen here, and that would be one explanation for the kind of extreme reaction we've seen out of the government, which, you know, compared to the amount of deaths we've seen so far, and it's been bad, but it's not been statistically anything like what people were predicting. You got to wonder where that came from, and so I think that's just a possibility as well.
You mentioned it was used bioweapons in the Battle of Stalingrad. Also, I want to point out, being somewhat of a history buff of World War II, the Japanese used extensive, I believe, bioweapon warfare in China in World War II. Prior to actually the United States getting into World War II. Jim, I want to ask you about the whole, how quickly people have, some have said we've given up a lot of rights. Of 85% of the American people, Jim Cantrell, are on lockdown. And you have to wonder, is the coronavirus a test to see how compliant we are with more Big Brother in our lives? And I'm wondering about when this all settles down. It's not that far. Think about getting on an airplane and how 9/11, Jim Cantrell, changed everything with TSA. You could see, like, maybe you'll need a doctor's certificate to get on an airplane. I mean, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, so I had a boss who was very wise, and one of the things he told me is never attribute to malice what you can otherwise attribute to incompetence. So in terms of anybody planning this thing and having, you know, conspiracy plans, I don't buy into that because I agree with my boss, Frank, that, you know, it's really hard to do. So I don't really think it's malice, but I do think that there's a tendency among our leadership anywhere in the world But it surprises me how much we see it here in the United States to really have these dictatorial tendencies to want to clamp down on everything. You know, the lockdown to me has no real constitutional basis that I can understand at the state level or the federal level. There's some Fifth Amendment issues that are attending this, and various states have different levels of response to this, and some of the states are just absolutely ridiculous. I think it was Vermont, I can't remember exactly, was limiting things you could buy. You couldn't buy seeds. Why in the hell can't you buy seeds? So for me, you know, I wake up, and having spent a lot of time in the former Soviet Union, this looks a whole lot more like the Soviet Union than I'm comfortable with, because what I see is a fairly compliant population, which is good in a sense, but in a sense it's bad, that is listening to the government, and the government's really stepping all over our individual rights. And if this goes on much longer, there's some very serious constitutional questions we have to ask ourselves and answer about how we want our society to look going forward. Is this really the kind of power you want to give to the government to control our lives over something called a virus? What about the next virus that comes along? Don't think about just this. What about the flu season next year? You know, we're setting precedents with this in allowing this restriction on us. And yes, it may be for the public good, but what about the deaths that come from all the economic duress that's coming here? Think about all the damage this is really causing economically. And is it really warranted by the threat that we see? I think it, in another way of looking at this, this potentially could destroy any faith in the government if it turns out that this thing is not nearly as bad as everybody said it would be. And we've gone through this you know, almost Harry Carey kind of maneuver economically to control it. So I'm not real happy with the way the government's handled this, to be honest. And I'm much more of a believer in our individual freedoms and our individual liberty and decision-making. And, you know, when this was the Wild West, we didn't have the government to take care of us, and somehow we managed to survive.
Jim Cantrell, thank you very much for your time. All the best to you. Stay safe.
My pleasure.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you, Bill.
Jim Cantrell's the former CEO of Vector Launch here in Tucson. He's got a new enterprise also dealing with spacecraft, and we'll catch up with him down the road and hear more about that. But right now we need to catch up immediately with CBS News with a news break. Then the spiritual side of COVID-19. Father Robert Hendrickson is on the line. He'll be next after the break.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
It's easy being green. Promote wind, install solar, drive electric cars, ban mining. Wait a minute! You can't ban mining! Green is good, but hey, no can do without the metals green products need from mining. If you ban mining, you'll ban everything green. And today's minds are on board, researching technologies that provide critical materials for a greener world. Being green, another miracle from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Like many people, I've been thinking about maybe some kind of what they call like a reviving that whole World War II Victory Garden concept. Well, Green Things has, they're upping their game as well with the Green Lady Hydro business. And basically for the small home grower, ready-made hydro kits that are easy to assemble. And of course, you'll need nutrients. And boy, do they have the good ones. Fox Farm, they've got Roots Organic and Ocean Forest over at Green Things. And 50 years and still growing. Their 50th anniversary year, 3384 East River Road. The website, greenthingsaz.com. And of course, also home to Zocalo Village, zocalovillage.com. Lots of good things going on over at Green Things on their 13 acres. Let's welcome now one of the two dozen contributors to this program. I'm so proud of this team, and Father Robert Hendrickson, who is the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church, is the Buckmaster Show Faith and Spirituality contributor. Father Robert, how are you, my friend?
I am all right, Bill. How are you?
I'm doing well. Today marks, of course, the beginning, I believe, Passover beginning tonight. And here we are right in the middle of Holy Week. We've got Good Friday coming up Friday and then Easter. This is like a challenge that we have not seen in any of our lifetimes with the COVID-19. And suddenly, services going online. How has that challenge been for you, Father Robert?
Well, it would be a bit like watching the Super Bowl if they didn't have a ball. I mean, it sort of feels like at times. It's an interesting experience. I mean, the thing that I take some comfort in, if you read Scripture, basically all of the epistles were basically letters from Paul doing remote pastoring of communities he couldn't see. So that's sort of how we're trying to look at this.
Huh. And it's not like breaking bread has not had its challenges over the past
right.
2,000 years, correct?
Well, exactly. And you look at our history, and you know, it always feels like we're living in difficult times. But you look back through the church's history, and over and over and over again, there have been these periods where we've had to figure out how to be creative in times of difficulty, and times of challenge, and times of illness and sickness. So this is one of those periods, and now I think it's also an opportunity for us to figure out what's essential to what we do and how we do it. And so it's, you know, may you live in interesting times is one of those curses that I feel like we have right now, but that's all right.
And of course, we've all heard the saying, there are no atheists in foxholes, and we have a situation here where we've got a war with COVID-19, and a lot of people are thinking about their faith and spirituality. How are you and your team at St. Philip's handling this, Father Robert?
Well, a number of things. One of the things we have really tried to do is make sure that we have some way to connect with people every single day. So whether that is emails that go out every morning that are reflections on Scripture, whether that's calls that are made to all of our parishioners, you know, by other parishioners or by the clergy. You know, we have letters that go out a couple of times a week. There are daily services online every morning. There are Sunday services going online. And, of course, during Holy Week, we have services really starting on Palm Sunday, but tonight, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday that are all online. So trying to make sure that in this time of physical distance that we maintain some sort of social connection and spiritual connection is ever more important.
Well, I will say personally, I'm seated here in my Bustos Media Tucson studios alone, and it's not the way I like it. All of our interviews are over the phone. I get energy from people seated across the table from me, Father Robert, just the way this, the way I do it. I mean, you know, you've been in the studio with me. I like to see the reaction from people, and that's missing kind of on the phone. So I know that you probably draw energy, don't you, off when you're officiating a service? Don't you draw a certain amount of energy from the parishioners who are there in front of you?
Well, absolutely. And when you're giving a sermon in particular, you can tell how things are going usually.
Yeah.
At least a decent preacher can sort of tell how the room is going. You can tell, okay, I'm going on a little too long, or this point is a little confusing. And I have to say that my cat is not a very good audience for getting how my sermons are going right now.
Well, luckily I have a wonderful engineer producer who I can see through the other side of the glass. So John is acting as kind of the every person for me out there in the listening audience. I know that the parishioners have been very good at St. Philip's about raising some money to help people who really have fallen on hard times. And when you're looking at perhaps these upcoming unemployment rates could rival anything seen during the darkest days of the 1930s Depression, help is needed. Go ahead, Father Robert.
Yeah, I mean, we're doing some basic things, like we have our food bank going, so we're helping people with food. We're making grocery ones for folks, making assistance where we can with rental assistance, things like that. But one thing that I'm particularly proud of is that we've just raised enough money to purchase and forgive all of the available outstanding medical debt in Pima County.
Wow.
So through a company, working with a company called RIP Medical Debt that buys up delinquent medical debt for families that are in poverty, we have been able to buy about $3.5 million worth of delinquent medical debt in Pima County. And we're going to forgive that in the spirit of Easter. And so that will enable about 1,700 families to receive a letter in the mail over the next couple of weeks that tells them if they're in a certain economic category that their medical debt is forgiven. And so that's one. It's for us, it feels like a big step, but it's also, I think, for a lot of families in these kind of economic times to receive something that says, that's not another bill, but is a letter in the mail that says your debt has been forgiven, is about the closest thing to an Easter message we can imagine giving to our neighbors right now.
Oh my goodness. $3.5 million in delinquent medical debt forgiven in Pima County by the wonderful giving people at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church. What will be your message, your Easter message, Father Robert?
Well, I think that my Easter message is going to focus on how much this Easter feels like the first Easter, that the apostles and the friends of Jesus who were in hiding in the upper room, sort of in fear, trying to figure out what's going on around them, trying to figure out how have things just changed so substantially, that they weren't sitting there sort of saying, oh my gosh, if we just wait 5 more minutes, we know Jesus will rise. What they were doing is sitting there huddling, saying, what does this mean? And then they got this news that Mary Magdalene brought them, that she had seen Jesus. And what was their first reaction? They didn't dare to believe it. They had to run and see it themselves. And so I feel like we're in that similar place where we're trying to figure out what news the next day is going to bring, trying to figure out where our hope lies if we dare to believe in something new. And so I think that that's where I'm going to put my focus, is that the first Easter looked a whole lot more like this one than it has other ones. You know, as much as we all love the kind of going to Easter Sunday services and having the Easter big Easter meal and Easter egg hunts and all of that, really this looks a lot more like that first Easter was, which was filled with a mix of anticipation and anxiety and all of that. So my hope is that people come away on Easter morning thinking, maybe feeling a little closer to the story itself, which I think is part of what we're all being challenged to, is figure out what's essential to our faith, what do we really believe in, and where do we put our hope in times like this.
Where can people watch the services?
At stphilipstucson.org/online. So if they go to the website, what will pop up is a whole list of online options, how they can either watch on YouTube or on Facebook Live. And so they'll be able to see all of that. Plus, there's a whole lot more online information, like we have online Bible studies, classes, all of those sorts of things going on too.
All right, Father Robert, I will be watching. Father Robert Hendrickson, thank you, and a blessed Holy Week to you, sir. Thank you very much.
You as well, Bill. Thanks. Stay safe and healthy.
Thank you very much. We will certainly try. Father Robert is our faith and spirituality contributor. And again, I want to emphasize being a proud member. I don't go as often as I should to St. Philip's, but boy, oh boy, that just knocked my socks off, John. Hearing that news, a little over $3.5 million in delinquent medical debt in Pima County is being forgiven thanks to the efforts of the people at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church. Congratulations. That is really great news. We'll be right back in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD. The current Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year plan, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify priority projects based on public input. RTA member jurisdictions will submit their respective project lists by June 2020 for the CAC to consider for a future plan. To learn more, visit www.rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
During this coronavirus crisis, Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, is still open for takeout and home delivery only. You can get all of your favorite Noble Hops menu offerings. Come pick them up, or they'll bring them to you. So check out Noble Hops on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and online at noblehopspub.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show here in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Here is 1030 The Voice, trusted news talk in Southern Arizona. This portion of the program presented by our friends over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. I don't know about you, but I just can't wait for all of this to be over. So I can get in the car and I can travel to places like Silver City, 3-hour drive from Tucson. And at last report, the Blues Festival Memorial Day weekend is still on. A decision on that will be made very soon. Also, the Clay Festival, the big summer event, July 13th, everything to do with pottery, is still on. The website, southwestnewmexico.org. Joining us now from the nation's capital, Terry Bracey, our expert on Washington and governmental affairs. Terry's enjoyed a long and distinguished career, beginning as a key aide to Congressman Morris K. Udall. Terry went on to serve under four presidents of both parties. He's senior partner in the respected governmental affairs firm of Bracey, Tucker, Brown, and Valenzano, representing the city of Tucson and Pima Community College, a couple of their local clients. Terry, how are you, my friend?
I'm fine. You know, just sort of existing in this new world like everybody else. And I'm here mourning the loss of baseball season.
Yeah, a lot of people are, but this would be really intriguing if they all get together in Phoenix, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, it would be great. What a good idea. You know, the Nationals and the Cubs and the Diamondbacks are all picked by the experts to make the playoffs. So we've got three good teams to pull for, and so far no games. But let's hope that this Phoenix idea works out.
Yeah, it'd be a TV-only deal without, you know, big crowds. There'd be, in fact, no crowd, but hey, it'd be on TV, which would be something for all the sports people.
Absolutely. I think it'd be great.
Terry, I want to turn to your very thoughtful op-ed piece in the Arizona Daily Star. And in fact, I posted on Facebook. I think it's one of the best things you have ever written, the piece having to do with, the impact of COVID-19, the virus really has touched just about everybody in this country. Why don't you tell us about some of your thoughts, what went into this piece?
Well, I really am surprised in a way that it's been downloaded so much. It's gone all over the country now. And I noticed that a number of days later, it's still the most popular op-ed in the Star. So I really think it was not such a great written piece, but that it touched a nerve. I think I kind of said what everybody was thinking. And, you know, I volunteered to be the family shopper during this calamity, and these excursions have taught me a lot about people. In the early days of the shutdown, I'd see some people filling two or three carts with toilet paper and running out of the place, leaving none for anyone else. And in those days, try to find Clorox wipes or hand sanitizers. But as time wore on, I observed more and more people taking products that they need, but leaving some behind for others. And after 2 weeks of observation, I concluded that generosity was trouncing selfishness, and by a lot.
And I indeed share your observation, and I still have not seen in over a month a roll of toilet paper or Clorox wipes, but maybe I'm just arriving at the wrong time to the stores. Terry Bracey, what do you think of the government's response to all of this?
Well, Bill, I'm blown away by the courage of state and local officials. I really am. From Governor Cuomo of New York to Mayor Romero of our town, Tucson, I think these leaders are stepping up with tough decisions that have been unpopular with many people, but I think history will judge them as heroes who saved lives.
As far as the federal government response?
Well, sad to say, that's a different story. The administration's difficulty began when the president and the Republicans on the Hill and John Bolton, who was the national security advisor, decided that the White House office that President Obama had established in the wake of the SARS outbreak, that investment was a waste of money. They killed the program. So when COVID-19 hit, we had no army to fight it on the national level. We had to assemble volunteers to help Dr. Fauci, and the main reason we had been so late, and I think that's it. I think that's the main reason we've been so late on the national level.
And how about the president's response?
Oh, well, yeah, I think everybody knows. He sort of hasn't been the best. But what the crisis really reveals to me is how much the American government professionals like Fauci, who were the envy of the world years ago, have been abused and disrespected by Republican governments, and especially this one, and how profoundly that abuse has impacted on the quality of government operations. Many of our best people, Bill, have taken early retirement, and the best and brightest in our colleges no longer choose government service, and this is something that must be reversed.
What do you think good will come out of this, Terry?
Well, I think there'll be a lot. I think it will finally put to rest this America First slogan as a Chinese speed bias dealing with this virus. We're not an island unto itself. Walls can't stop the air and the wind and human contact that brings threats like the virus. We need countries work with us, and on a personal level, we need each other, and I think it's showing that. In our neighborhood, Bill, there's no talk of politics. It's all about, can we help those aged and infirm neighbors who need it? And kind of the hero in this place is Dr. Fauci.
Technology will change out of this, and that could be a very good thing, right, Terry?
I think we're going to see a great leap forward in telemedicine that will last far beyond, this crisis. And that will add, hopefully, first-rate medical services to small communities, many of which have been left behind in this Internet age. It'll hurry the development of Wi-Fi in communities who have limited Internet services and nothing. I mean, some of the reservation, Navajo reservation, things like that, those people will be plugged in.
Terry, I've only got a couple of minutes left. Your thoughts on Bernie Sanders deciding today that he will drop out?
Well, he accepted the inevitable, which I think is good. He wouldn't do it with Hillary Clinton because there was a level of mutual distrust and dislike. But I think everybody likes Joe Biden. I think most people have a feeling that he's the kind of person that might help bring the country back together. Bill Bradley once told me that when he was in the Senate, that Joe Biden was the best politician in the Senate, that he could get the most conservative people to work with the most liberal people. I think, that's really the kind of person we need. I think maybe Sanders came to realize that his liberal agenda, it wasn't a liberal agenda. It was, kind of an extreme agenda, I think wouldn't sell to more than maybe 20 or 25% of the Democratic Party. So I think it was a smart decision. I think it was a mature decision. And I hope now he gets behind Joe Biden.
Terry Bracey, all the best to you and stay well, okay, Terry? My love to your family.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks a lot. Terry Bracey with us from Washington, D.C. Tomorrow we have Congresswoman Ann Kirkpatrick on the program, also scheduled. We've got Sharon Bronson will be with us, Pima County Supervisor. Then we'll have our Sun Corridor, Inc. interview, and it's going to be... Zach is going to be on the program, actually. Zach Yenser will be your host of Tipping Point. What a fine young man he is, as he is the head of the Young Tucson Professionals. So we'll talk with Zach on the show tomorrow. On behalf of John Couch, my engineer producer, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Thank you very much for joining us. If you missed a portion of the program, we'll have it all posted for you at buckmastershow.com. Dave Ramsey with his program on money is coming up. Have a good afternoon.